excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving. Keep turning our way, and our way
is on the road again. Welcome to this big game edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you on the way home from Stamford Stadium. Quick recap. The Bears quickly bumbled this game away, starting with a fumble that quickly led to a touchdown for Stanford for a 7-0 lead early in the game. The Bears were able to tie it at 7 and then again at 10 after trading field goals, before giving Stanford another field goal before halftime for a 13-10 halftime lead. In the second half, the Bears gave Stanford another short field with an interception that they again quickly converted into a touchdown for a 20-10 lead. The game remained stagnant at that point, with the Bear offense completely unable to make progress, and the Bear defense finally doing well enough to keep Stanford in check, until late in the game when a field goal by the Bears seemed to bring them back to life, but last-minute rallying proved unsuccessful, and the Bears, although they had a number of shots into the end zone, were unable to score the touchdown and fell 7 points short, 13-20. But I think the first thing that should be said beyond that is the collapse is complete. The more talented team with the better players lost again. The Bears have not been outmanned in any game this season. In fact, the only game where the Bears were not given ample opportunities to get back into the game and failed to make the most of those opportunities was the Arizona State game, where their pounding run game in the second half put that game away without giving Cal another chance. But in every single one of their other games, 6 out of 7 now that they've lost, the Bears had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to get in the game and managed to bumble away those opportunities. One of the key things I noted today was the difference in Stanford and Cal's ability to convert on third down. Not so much in the percentages, because I suspect they were similar, but more in their distances that they were being converted. Cal had a lot of third and shorts that they managed to convert, but whenever they were facing a third and long, you could almost guarantee that they weren't going to get it. Stanford, on the other hand, would pound the ball into the line on first and second down, setting up third and long, and then would convert frequently. And I don't know what to make of that, other than to say I think it was a huge factor in the final outcome. Final outcome was determined by two things. One, Stanford's ability to just kind of keep moving along despite mostly being dominated. And two, the turnovers that gave them a short field. Two of them that set up two touchdowns that were the difference. Let's break it down unit by unit. On offense, Longshore obviously struggled today. He seemed very hesitant, very unwilling to pick a receiver and just go with it. He also was locking on his receivers, visually keying the defense as to where he was going. And then he had some balls that were poorly thrown. He did get a lot of heat and a lot of pressure coming at him that forced him to release balls earlier or didn't allow him to step into his throws. So not all of those bad throws really belong on his shoulders, but there were enough that you have to know that he could have done a lot better than he did, and there were a lot of balls that he didn't throw well. At the same time, the receiver core didn't do that well. Hawkins has seemed to regress in the last few games, where he's dropping more and more passes. He had 2 touchdowns that he could have caught. Both of them were not the easiest catches, but it was back-to-back plays where if he comes up with one of those catches, the game is tied, and he didn't come up with either. The shining star of today on the receiving core was Jordan, and Jordan, although he has the streak that he set up for the longest streak of receptions in Cal history, really has had kind of a weak season compared to Hawkins and DeSean Jackson. But today he shined. He was the replacement for DeSean, and he made the most of that opportunity. You'll notice the ball was very infrequently thrown to the third guy who... There were 2 or 3 receivers who took the role, Cunningham and DeSaw and a couple of others, but they didn't play into the game plan nearly at all, and the lack of either trust by Longshore or the coaching staff or what have you was evident, and they were just out there running dummy routes. Tight ends actually got a lot more involved today in the passing game. Stevens had a lot of very good and impressive catches over the middle on swing out patterns, and I think actually this was one of the best games for the tight ends in a number of games. So in that sense, they did well. In blocking, however, they did very poorly. There were a number of opportunities where Longshore was either nearly sacked or sacked that was the responsibility of a tight end to pick up that blocker. And I think, I don't know what was the cause, but they were the tight end's responsibility. And while I'm about to have no sympathy for the offensive line, who I thought performed very poorly, the tight ends didn't help the offensive line any when they were in blocking formations. The offensive line did horribly. They were not opening holes for Forsett. They were letting through the pass rush very porous all game, and it was really disappointing because despite the fact that they've had trouble with run blocking, they've done a pretty good job with pass protection up until this week. Now this week, it looks like we were the Stanford teams of old that couldn't protect the quarterback. The only difference was Longshore usually had the smarts to get rid of it quick enough and not take the sack. But the offensive line was making it extremely difficult for the offense to be productive. And if there's one unit I think you could blame the offensive struggles on, it's the offensive line. They made it so all the timing was out of sync, that Longshore couldn't set and throw. It added to his jitteriness throughout the game. And I think if they had done good pass protection, you would have seen the Bears win this game, and a lot more of Longshore's passes being complete. Play calling overall was good, good balance. I liked that some of the times when the Bears seemed down, they went to some trick plays to loosen up the defense and give the offense a little bit of confidence in trying something new. So overall, I felt they did well with play calling. We didn't have any opportunities to further prove the let's not run it on first and goal inside the 5, so nothing there to analyze. But the fact that we never got that deep in shows just how bad the offense performed. Moving over to the defense, I felt like they did okay. I mean, if you take away the 2 touchdowns, they only gave up 6 points. And those 2 touchdowns were on very short fields. Now, I'm starting to get a little bit disappointed with how frequently it happens that the turnover gets given up and the defense isn't coming up with the big stop. I don't expect that every series, but I do expect some of the time for it to happen, and it hasn't been. Routinely, they're giving up the touchdown or the field goal and have not been making an exceptional difference. I think part of that's the whole bend but don't break, but on the other hand, there's those moments where you really need to step up and make the most of the situation. on defense as well as offense. And the defense was given two key opportunities to make a difference and were unable to convert on those. But other than that, I felt like they did okay. As I've said, the goal is to keep people to 20 points or less, and the offense needs to come up with more than 20 points. The offense isn't doing their job. You can't expect the defense to be perfect. And so they did their job. They managed to stop them well enough. The run blocking was pretty good. I got frustrated at the end of the game that they were not able to be more effective against the run when it was clear Stanford was grinding out the clock. But overall, they did a very good job of stopping up the run. The linebackers seem to be a little bit better, but one area where they've really struggled this season and continued today was zone protection on the underneath passes. It's really the middle linebacker's responsibility generally, and they gave up a number of big plays over the middle to get key first downs on third and long. And I think it's because the middle linebacker is not properly recognizing where he needs to sit down in the zone and make sure that he's not giving up that easy play to that tight end or who's sneaking out from the middle and setting up a play. The secondary did very well in run blocking situations, and there were a number of tackles by the safeties and the corners coming up to make plays on running plays. However, they gave up a ton of passes that were just too easy for Stanford, out patterns, and they went for 5 and 10 yards. I really felt like if there was a group that didn't do what it needed to do, it was the corners and the safeties in pass protection. Now, that may have been game planning. It may have been that Gregory was thinking, if we can just play this soft, they're not going to be able to do it consistently. We'll let them hang themselves, and our offense should be able to come through with the 20 to 30 points to make sure that works. So, in that sense, I guess, you know, if it was the game plan, they executed on it. It's just the offense didn't come through with their half of the bargain. But, well, I don't know what else to say other than that that strategy was not working because the offense couldn't come through with its half. So the defense perhaps should have had a strategy that was not relying on a productive offense. So what are we to make of this season? What are we to make of this horrendous collapse? A team that started out beating Tennessee. Tennessee, who ended up going to the SEC championship game, beat Georgia, who's likely going to go to a BCS bowl, and then went into Oregon and beat Oregon, who has proven, until they lost Dixon, to be pretty much the best team in the country in their ability to score at will, and defense does pretty well. How can you reconcile that team with the team that has played a mediocre game against a very gambling defense, Oregon State, that stunk it up against a ridiculously weak UCLA team, that went into Arizona State and despite being given way too many opportunities to win that game, only managed to choke away those opportunities late in the game, particularly as Longshore's injury worsened throughout the game, that was only able to beat Washington State by 3 points, eking out a painful victory, then lost to USC in a game that, again, they were not outplayed and not outclassed, and then went up to Washington and stunk it up. The reality is the Bears have now played two back-to-back horrific games. It seemed like they were just starting to get back on track with USC. Because USC is a good team, and yeah, there were opportunities to win that game, but, you know, Cal played okay against a pretty good team, and you think that that performance would have beat Washington and would have beat Stanford. Instead, they regressed further, their confidence was shot, and they completely took themselves out. This is Tedford's first regular season without a winning record. And think about that. Think about the lack of talent he had in 2002 and 2003. Teams that went 8-5 and 7-5 respectively. This team is 6-6. This team is infinitely more talented at just about every position. But what they don't have that the teams up through 2004 had, and there seemed to be enough of in 2005 and 2006 to get by, was heart. I just don't see this team playing like the teams of old, playing like they've got something to prove. The big questions everyone's going to start asking about now, of course, is what do we do for next year with Longshore versus Riley? And I'll be honest, it's a difficult question. I think to some degree Longshore is a scapegoat for a much bigger problem that the offense has that really starts around their inability to execute their plays, and that starts with the offensive line. The offensive line's going to have to get better for this team to have a hope. But nevertheless, there is reason to ask, is Longshore really the guy to take us to the next level? Can Riley be a better quarterback? And I don't know the answer to this question, I'll be honest. I think my gut instinct is it's very tempting to have a grass is greener on the other side attitude, to look at Riley and say, he can't be worse than Longshore. And how many times has a team made that switch and it came back to bite them? Maybe not the next week, but the week after that. So my gut feeling is that until we have more playing time with Riley, you have to assume that Longshore is going to be the better option, particularly with a whole off season to improve on his weaknesses and get back to the throwing motion that he had in 2006 that put up so many big points against a lot of fairly good teams. But I will say this. We haven't had the opportunity to see whether Riley could be a great quarterback. He's gotten no playing time ever since the Oregon State game, where he showed flashes of brilliance and, of course, a couple of crucial mistakes. I really wish that a couple series here and there throughout three or four of the games since Oregon State, Riley was given some playing time, particularly after the ASU loss, when now it was clear that this team was not going to be top flight. Because now we're stuck with the situation of wondering. We don't have enough experience on the field to really know how good Riley would be. No matter how many practices you have and how many simulations you have, you're never going to know whether a quarterback has that it factor until you put him in the game. And even if they do have it, it's going to take them a while to mature into that role. Two or three games at an absolute minimum. So that's frustrating. I really wish that Riley would have had more of an opportunity. But I'm not going to say that in the sense that I think Riley is a better quarterback. I'm just saying we don't know, and we haven't had the opportunity to find out. A few other items to talk about. First of all, Stanford Stadium. You know, as much as we like to bag on Stanford, you have to give them credit for doing an extremely good job of coming up with a design that they could quickly implement without losing a single season that is a pretty darn good stadium. The concessions were nice, the concourse was nice and wide, the seats were very nice, the environment was nice and close. I had some rough seats. I was down in the third row in the corner. I didn't even have the straight-on view of the end zone like the students did. But, you know, that's just, you just get in the pick of the draw. There are always some seats in a stadium that aren't that great, and the low seats don't have depth perception. But overall, that is a really nice stadium. And the tunnels make it so much nicer to go in and out when you're not on the second deck, not having to go up to the top and down to the bottom again. So I was very impressed with Stanford Stadium. It made the driving and parking and all of that so much nicer, because at 50,000 people, it's not so hard to get in and out as when you have 80,000 people. So I was very pleased with that portion of it. I think they set a high bar that I'm hoping Cal can live up to, and we can move forward on our renovation and see Memorial improve to the point where it's the facility it's capable of being. Of course, another piece that I'm sure people will be talking about is the referees. I'm always frustrated when we don't get to see on the Jumbotron or whatever the replays. And it angers me to no end that the one play they showed on the Jumbotron that was under review was the one where it looked like there was clear evidence that he stepped out. And what everyone missed on that was he was dragging his other foot before the one that clearly was out touched down. That's what people missed. But they didn't show the interception that was held. They didn't show the completion up against the Cal sideline that, at least from my vantage point, I cannot imagine how it is even conceivably possible that he was in bounds. He caught that ball as he was running through the coaching staff of Cal. But I had a low profile, so it could be it didn't at all look like what I thought it did. But they didn't show anything, not a single replay. And if you're going to have that policy, fine, but then you better not show it for any of them. Not the Cal plays, not the Stanford plays, nothing. There were definitely a lot of penalties for Cal, and it's hard to know what to make of that. Some of those were cases where Cal was definitely playing chippy and not playing with the intensity at the game as opposed to at the Stanford players that they should be. But at the same time, it just felt like, particularly with holding penalties and pass interference penalties, that Cal was not getting near the benefit of the doubt that the Stanford team was. There was one that came down to my corner, so it was pretty obvious that Sid Kwan was blocking the guy out and made it so that the other guy didn't have a path to the ball, and they called pass interference. And a similar thing happened later in the game with a Cal player who was, if it was Forsett, running to get under the ball, and the defender effectively blocked him out. Well, we only saw one pass interference call. So that was very frustrating to me. I felt like Cal was not getting the benefit of the doubt, and Stanford was. I don't think it was explicit bias. I think maybe there's just an underdog factor going on where, you know, you tend to want to give the underdog the benefit of the doubt and the favorite team not so much. And despite the fact that Cal's losing left and right, they still continue to be the favorite in just about every one of their games. Final thing to talk about is the bowl situation. So I don't have the results of the ASU-Arizona game, but pretty much everything hinges on that. And there's only two scenarios. If Arizona wins the game, well, there is a third scenario, but it's unlikely. If Arizona wins that game, Cal's not going to be in a bowl. There will not be two BCS Pac-10 teams, and there will be a total of six teams ahead of Cal with better Pac-10 records, and Cal's only 6-6, so they don't get to leapfrog any of the teams like Arizona and UCLA, who are themselves 6-6, but have a better Pac-10 record. If ASU wins, then it all comes down to whether ASU gets to go to a BCS game, and I'm sure they will, or at least that's my opinion, and therefore the Bears are either going to the Las Vegas Bowl or the Emerald Bowl, based on how those two decide to negotiate things out. But thinking about it in the big picture, this is not a team that deserves to go to a bowl, and I think they're going to get beat. I think that just about whoever they play, this team had already given up. I don't see any reason why they would stop giving up now. They're going to get beat by any team that comes in with some heart to play, unless they show something else than what they have been showing. So I'm almost hoping they get locked out of the bowls, that we don't have to witness one more painful bowl. I, to be honest, am not, definitely not traveling to Las Vegas. Although, before I left for this trip, I was thinking of going to the Emerald Bowl. I don't want to pay the money for that and watch them get beat in a game that's not going to be anywhere near free for me. This season is over, in my opinion. In a bowl game, they happen to slide into one. It's just a matter of course and a further proof of how ridiculously diluted the bowl situation is, where just about any team who's 6-6 gets to go to some bowl. Doesn't matter if you started 5-0 and you finished the season 1-6, you're going to get to a bowl game. That wraps up this edition of the On the Road Home podcast. Indeed, the bowl situation goes against Cal. This will be the last podcast of the season. I'm hopefully going to continue the podcast next season, and I also may look at doing some sort of midweek either interview show or something like that to round out my podcast to be more than just a post-game thing. Until then, thank you for listening, and go Bears. On the road again.